Welcome to the Pretty Deadly Podcast, a weekly show about self-defense and teaching self-defense and martial arts to women. I'm Susie Collick, the founder of Pretty Deadly Self-Defense. Today's episode is with our Pretty Deadly certified trainer, Christy Johnson. Christy is located in Alpena, Michigan, which is not the Upper Peninsula and not the Lower Peninsula. It is somewhere in the middle of Michigan. Not quite in the lake, not quite Detroit. It's neither here nor there. But coming as a Midwesterner, I can make all these jokes. Although I'm sure Michigan people now hate me for it. But nonetheless, Christy has joined Pretty Deadly this year in 2023. She was certified in Chicago. She is a, let's see, what can I say? Christy is an untraditional athlete. That's what she calls herself on Instagram, at untraditional athlete, if you'd like to follow her, which I recommend that you do. She has a gym. She's had a print shop. She does weightlifting and bodybuilding and has also done roller derby skating. Welcome, Christy.
Well, thank you. And I don't think that anybody from Michigan's going to hold that against you. Alpena is a very tiny town up towards the northern part of the Lower Peninsula, which is very confusing because we say northern Michigan. And a lot of times people just forget that the Upper Peninsula exists, which is rude. That's what they get uptight about. So you're good.
but not in Chicago. We all know about the UP.
Yeah. A lot of Chicagoans like to vacation in the UP. The UP is beautiful. God.
It is. I've been there once in my life, a long time ago. But anyway, Michigan aside, let's hear a little bit more about you. So what's your studio like in Michigan?
Oh, it's tiny. So I do primarily one-on-one training. My entire jam is really helping people who don't traditionally love to exercise and improving their relationship with fitness and creating that one-on-one environment where they can go be comfortable, not feeling like they're on display like they may at a bigger gym or out in the world, you know, in public, going running, et cetera. It gives them, creates that safe space for them to be able to really explore what they can do with their bodies without any kind of shame or anything like that kicking in. It's a very colorful studio. It's very bright. I actually had a guest trainer in there this weekend and she was just looking it around like, what is this circus you've got going on? But I think that movement needs to be, you know, joyful or, you know, rageful with purpose. But I just love Yeah. I mean, you know, like if you're having a rough day and you want to go and lift some weights and just kind of work that out, it's a beautiful, healthy way to do that, you know? So, I love our little studio.
Good. It's called Skelefit Studio for anyone in the Alpena region who would like to join or drive by or just say hello as you're passing down the street. I've seen photos of it. It is very colorful looking. I know that teal is your favorite color, at least for the studio. And that is very prominently displayed, which is great. So if you like bright colors and you like to work out in, joyful places, because it looks like a really joyful place. That's what I get from it.
Yeah, that's the main thing is just really feeling like you can be yourself and enjoying yourself. And on the teal note, I just ordered a teal disco ball to hang up in my studio.
Excellent. So why is this important to you? The way that people work out, the fact that, or the idea of working out without shame, of changing your relationship to fitness. Where did that come from for you?
I think that as I was coming of age, my mom was in that generation that was just beat over the head with the messaging of your body's not good enough. We need to be thin. We need to shrink ourselves. We need to be small. And that did not ever serve me. But she, you know, would give me diet books. Like I think about the Atkins diet book that she gave me, and reading through it and going, none of this makes sense, you know. But if it was all under the vein of, you know, being thinner, which equated to being healthier, which now we know is not necessarily the case, it was just a really rough way to be. And it took me, God, I'd say probably 20 years before I really gave fitness a good try, because I was so intimidated by that messaging and really felt like a failure for so many years when it came to fitness. So my initial approach was I wasn't even going to try, because I was trying to force myself to do things that I didn't like to do. I am not a runner. I don't like to go running, but I thought that the way to be fit, if you were to be fit, you had to go running, and running is great for a lot of people. And so it wasn't until I found a sport, which was roller derby, that I really enjoyed doing, that encouraged me to want to participate in more things physically. So I knew I loved to roller skate because it brought me so much joy as a child. And I liked the idea of having a full contact sport. We as women are not encouraged to participate in full contact sports. So when I had the opportunity, I kind of jumped at it. And as I became more involved with roller derby, I thought, oh man, I want to get good at this. And all of my coaches told me the same thing, which is, if you want to get good at this, you're going to need to cross train. And so I went, oh, I'm going to have to start running. And what I found was, no, there are several other ways to get cardio. And if I don't force myself to do something that I don't like, and instead go on a quest to find something that I do like, then that can change the game. And it was a total game changer for me.
Right. But there's two things that I want to ask about. One is, or one that I want to comment about. You know, this idea, I also grew up in that diet world. You know, I think the first time I started feeling ashamed of my body as being too overweight was when I was 5 in a bikini. Wow. At 5 years old, yeah. Which was 1972, right? That's not right. 1973. So that's messed up. You know,
oh, yeah.
That diet culture in the United States specifically is so pervasive. Mm-hmm. And I think it has kind of the insidious effect of separating you from your body, because you can't get it to look like what you think it's supposed to look like, you know, or what whoever is telling you it's supposed to look like, you know. And then those things change, and they're for the longest time, there was nothing supporting the idea that fashion and body types change. You know, mm-hmm. when I was a kid growing up in the 70s, the people who were considered beautiful women were like Mary Tyler Moore, who's a fairly slim lady.
Yeah.
You know, she's got some curves. She's got a little bit of a you know, figure eight, but she was a very slim and long-limbed lady.
Mm-hmm.
When I became an adult, as a young adult, the person who was setting fashion trends was Kate Moss. And that heroin, you know, what was then called heroin chic, was in fashion. And all I could think of was like, my body is just not right for this world, because my body is pretty full bodied. Even when I'm super trim, I've got some shape. I've got a chest, I've got hips, I've got, a classically curvy body. And it always felt like it's out of place. So I didn't want to, for me, the idea of like getting involved in sports and anything else was like, why? Why do I want to do anything with this thing that I hate spending time in?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's so much in our culture, whether it's in the United States or elsewhere, that encourages is a weird word, maybe discourages women from actually staying connected to our bodies and loving our bodies and learning from our bodies that, it's just, it's no wonder, no wonder. And the only sports that we're really ever encouraged to do are performative. They're for other people's enjoyment. Finding the ways that you can move inside your body that feel good for you, I think they're difficult for anybody to find, but I think it can be even harder for women, especially in the face of diet culture and fashion and all this other stuff. You went on to say this other thing that I found really interesting, which was women aren't encouraged to do contact sports. So when you found roller derby, that was a contact sport that you immediately liked. Why?
Well, the aspect of it, I think there were a few different things. I liked the movement. It felt very empowering more than anything. Roller derby was just the beginning of my realization that women could be in the same environment together and not pitted up against one another. Yes, there's going to be two teams and they're going to be battling against each other, in this competition. But there was such a love for one another in this sport where, yes, you're on the track, but, one of the themes that I've always used as a coach is hit her as hard as you respect her. And moving on from there. We're always out to compete competitively, but nobody's out to actually hurt somebody else on the other team. And it's a lot of smashing. For those of you who aren't familiar with roller derby, basically there's 2 point scorers, one from each team, and those point scorers have to get through a gauntlet of women who are trying to knock them out or down in order to get through, because that's how they score points, is they get up 1 point for each person that they pass on the opposite team. So that's where it can get, really dangerous but also very fun.
And by knocking out, you don't mean knocking unconscious, you mean knocking out of the track.
Yes. Out of bounds. Out of bounds. Yes. Of bounds. Good distinction. Yeah. Good distinction. Yeah. And so there was just this incredible camaraderie amongst the women. And after every match, we would go or bout is what we call them. We would go to an after party and dance our pants off, not literally, with the other team. And it was all, it was all in the spirit of just having this fun, empowering thing happening. And I remember on the body, identification and shaming part, I went to a conference. It was called RollerCon back in, 2006. And we went to the pool. And the pool was filled with nothing but roller derby ladies. And I realized this was the first time I had ever been in an environment where there was no body shaming going on amongst the women. There was a bunch of women playing like children in a pool who were not trying to cover up. They weren't trying to hide who they were. They weren't hiding under layers of clothing or, wearing t-shirts over their bikinis or whatever. They were just in the pool having fun. And I have ever since wanted to recreate that kind of experience, whether it be through my clients, whether it be through Pretty Deadly, different environments where women can feel empowered, embraced, and just be themselves and really thrive.
Play for me. I think that's the key word there. I think for me with sports, I was kind of forced by my parents to play soccer growing up, which I hated. And then as an adult, I started playing again on this very ragtag team. And it was really, really fun and I loved it. But as a kid, I couldn't stand it because there was, I was just being asked to do stuff that I just didn't know how to do, I think. But also it was no fun. There was no play. When I joined martial arts, at that time, my teacher was, things were pretty casual in our dojo. We studied in a very formal fashion, but at the same time, we were encouraged to play. And we were encouraged to have a good time. And granted, having a good time means, like, you know, throwing somebody and slamming them on the mat. That's, or kicking them across the room, you know, whatever it is. But that kind of play and that sort of, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, not tumbling, you know, but kind of like tumbling around and tearing around and just forgetting about your gender for a few minutes was such a relief. Like, you didn't, when I was training in martial arts, I mean, I don't know about the other guys, maybe they were really well aware of my gender and they covered it up really well because they were all ninjas. So who knows? But I felt I could forget that I was a woman. I could forget that I was a different gender. Like, gender just didn't matter. What mattered was, were you having a good time? Were you moving bodies around? Was yours moving around? You know, were you being mindful of the other person? Could you play with enough control that you could still do your techniques without actually, like, really hurting somebody? It was just play. And it was such a relief for me to forget about gender in those moments. That's one of the things I loved most about being in the dojo at where I trained in Los Angeles, as I just didn't have to think about it. And it, this is from someone who, you know, again, that body shaming, the diet culture, all of that stuff, never having a body that's fitting into the fashion norms at the moment, but also having a body that often felt like it was attracting the wrong kind of attention. You know, that I often felt betrayed me in a lot of ways because of the very feminine aspects of my body that didn't allow me to play in the way that I could in the dojo. So what you're talking about at the Roller Con or what you're doing at Skelefit Studio sounds exactly like that. It's like, it's a place where you can forget. It's such freedom to just be able to move your body and not think about the fact that, like, things are bouncing and jiggling and doing whatever. And it's like, and nobody, and you don't have to worry about other people getting excited about it.
Right. Right. I mean, if you think about it, you know, when we're, you know, looking at the Kate Mosses of the world and we're trying to sculpt, if you will, our bodies to look like someone else who does not have a similar form to us, and we're not successful in creating that body type for ourselves, we start to distrust ourselves. And that's where a lot of that shame kicks in. And once we distrust our bodies, or we get frustrated with our bodies, we stop remembering that our bodies are part of us. You know, it instead of being whole, instead it's me versus my body. And that is so dangerous. But that's where most women live. And oh, it's just heartbreaking. I've been there. Yeah. I'm sure you've been there too.
Oh yeah, absolutely. How do you feel that, you know, roller derby is a contact sport, right? And as you said, it's about either knocking somebody down or knocking somebody out of bounds. How would you use, it seems like a ridiculous question because it's such a contact sport, but how would you use self-defense to stay safe? When we think of self-defense, we always think of it in, like, big scary terms or for big scary environments. But obviously you had to keep yourself safe in the rink, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think that there's a lot of different ways because, yes, we're knocking the opponent, the point scoring opponent out or down. But at the same time, and this is the beautiful thing about roller derby, you're not only playing offense, but you're also playing defense at the same time. No other sport really does that, where, you know, usually you have an offensive player or a defensive player. Everybody in derby, except for the point scorer, who is called the jammer, works in both realms at the same time. And so we're doing a lot of defending, whether it's the way that we position our bodies, whether it's grouping up with another player or set of players to create walls so that the other opponent cannot get around us, that sort of thing. You become more in tune with your position and with your surroundings. Like, for example, one of the main things you will always hear in roller derby training is head on a swivel, head on a swivel, head on a swivel. You need to be aware of your surroundings because that point scorer could be coming up at any time. And in self-defense, you need to be aware of your surroundings. You need to trust your instincts. You need to be able to gauge when somebody's coming up behind you, because that's how the game is played. You know, you're skating in a circle and the point scorer is consistently going to be coming up behind you.
Did you ever get knocked down?
Oh my God. Yes. That's the first thing that we teach in the sport. On your very first day, you learn how to fall and how to stop safely, so that, you know, we can avoid injury.
Right. And what are the ways that you fall to avoid injury?
Well, we wear a significant amount of safety gear, and most of it is on the front of our bodies. So we typically will fall forward and we will fall into a slide so that we don't just jam down and hit our knees, you know, straight on the concrete instead, or polished concrete. Instead, we'll glide into it so that it doesn't, you know, it's not so abrupt, similar to how we train to absorb a hit.
In martial arts, the martial art that I practice, we have a forward roll called Zenpo Kaito. No. I feel like that's backwards. Anyway, I'm not going to remember the Japanese right now. But anyway, Kaiten roll. The way that we practice it is as we kind of evolve up through the ranks is usually we have someone push us so that, and those pushes can be quite violent sometimes, especially if the person you're training with is being an asshole. You can get this violent push. The goal, though, is to actually allow the push to happen and then allow your body to kind of go into a roll, mm-hmm. as opposed to, you know, jamming yourself directly on the floor. So that means kind of folding everything. You know, if okay. somebody pushes me, if they push me in the back, obviously my chest is going to be kind of thrust forward and my shoulders back. I'm trying to describe this for people who are only listening and can't see. but I'm going to have a reaction as I recover my balance, right, to bring my shoulders forward and my elbows forward. And in that reaction, I'm going to start to fold. So then I get closer to the ground, right? And as I'm folding, I'm also kind of extending forward at the same time, right? Which is kind of what I'm imagining going into a slide for you in mm-hmm. roller derby. Am I kind of describing what a fall would look like? Or would your falls look completely different?
Falls can look many different ways. But one thing that I did fail to mention is once we hit the ground, we are taught to turtle up. So all limbs, all extremities, everything tucks in because it can, mm-hmm. it's so easy for hands, limbs, et cetera, to get run over by roller skates because there's so many people on the track at once.
Right, right.
But oh, yeah, that's interesting. It sounds similar.
Right. It's also interesting that turtle up, you know, that fetal position essentially is really what that is, right? Which is our one and only true self-defense position that we're born with. So it's kind of great, but I never thought also about hands and limbs getting run over by roller skates.
Oh yeah.
Which sounds like that could really cause a lot of problems.
Yeah, well, you know, when you're getting up off the floor, which happens a lot in derby, we're always taught to use a fist rather than to have your hands like on the ground with your fingers spread out because you're just begging for trouble there.
Huh, interesting.
So if you must use a hand, use a fist.
So it sounds like everything is defensive, really. The way that you get up is defensive. The way that you fall mm-hmm. is defensive. And it's yep. everything is there to protect you, which forces you to really become aware of all of these different parts of your body. Like, don't forget about your fingers. Mm-hmm. Follow your hand into a fist when you get up.
Yep.
Right? Don't lay sprawled out. Turtle right. up.
Yep.
Right. Do you feel that that kind of training influenced any other part of your life? In terms of safety, as opposed to in terms of like, being able to knock people out of the aisle at the grocery store.
At
The car,
concerts.
because you can. Oh, yeah, that would be useful.
Yeah, I remember very much. I was standing at the front of a concert once, and these girls were trying to just kind of take over my space. And I thought, oh no, oh no. This is, you absolutely do not know who you're messing with, because this is what I do for fun. And I remember hip checking a girl and created a bunch of space for her friends to move into after that. I was like, I'm not moving for you. I just because I'm outnumbered does not mean that you're going to take this space over. Absolutely not. I guess it made me really more comfortable with taking up space and just, owning where I am in the world.
Oh, that's nice. That's nice. I think that that is, obviously that's kind of at the crux of what we are doing at Pretty Deadly as well. Gaining that confidence. I mean, obviously roller derby isn't for everybody. I've never tried
Sure.
it. I didn't do a good job in sixth grade at the roller rink, staying on my wheels. Then I wasn't about to become a roller derby person. But then again, I also hated soccer when I was a kid and loved it as an adult. So who knows? But that idea of, how can I get so familiar with my body that I'm aware when I fall that my fingers are splayed as opposed to curled into a ball? How can I be aware that there's someone coming up behind me? How can I bridge that connection that we started this conversation talking about not existing in our bodies, especially for women, because of diet culture and fashion and all that other stuff of being so separated, you versus your body. How can I bridge that gap? And I think that, oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, once you are able to do that, once you start training to do these different things like fall and turtle up and, make sure that your hand's not getting run over, especially if you have a close call, that's where you start to rebuild that trust with your body. That's where you start to go, oh, me and the body are one. We've got it together, and that's where that beautiful relationships can start to build again.
Right. And I think I just said the other thing was at the crux of Pretty Deadly. Now I'm going to say this is at the crux of Pretty Deadly, because both are at the crux of Pretty Deadly, which is really learning how to trust yourself, that you've got your own back. And I think that's
And
really,
that's why I love
really
the Pretty Deadly
important.
program.
Well, I was just going to ask you, so can you tell our listeners how you found Pretty Deadly and why you decided to add becoming a self-defense trainer to your skill set? Let's just start with that question, and then I'll have a follow-up.
Okay. I sought out Pretty Deadly. Like, I was looking for a self-defense program because I had a counselor reach out to me who had someone in our community who was very afraid to walk home from work at night. They worked in the service industry and they're transgender. And they told this counselor, listen, on my way home, I carry a roll of quarters in my hand. So if anybody attacks me, I can punch them with that roll of quarters in my hand and help defend myself. To which the counselor, thank God, said to this person, that's very unsafe. If you punch somebody while you're holding a roll of quarters, you're going to break your hand. And that's obviously not what you're looking to do here. And so she had approached me and said, hey, she knew that I was a boxing coach and said, is there any way that you could teach a self-defense class? Our community really needs it. And I thought to myself, well, this is absolutely something that there is a need here. I want to help, but I want to do it the right way. Just going in and teaching people a bunch of, traditional boxing moves isn't going to do much for them. So I was looking for a self-defense course, but I really wanted one that was thoughtful. And Pretty Deadly is just different from almost any other self-defense course that's offered in the world because it is so trauma informed, and it takes the approach that is so much more helpful to the participants than a traditional self-defense course is. And once I started really learning more about the program and the way that it's carried out, the way that it's taught, the people who are involved in it, I just knew. I said, these are my people. I just knew immediately that this was something I wanted to be a part of. And as far as wanting to add it to my training regimen, I mean, I don't know anybody in the world who can't use self-defense, you know? So if that's something I can offer as a personal trainer to, as an added benefit to my, my crew, my girls, why wouldn't I do that? You know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm just going to agree because I'm the founder of the program. So I might not be able to answer that very objectively. So what did you get out of the training? Did you get anything out of the training that you feel has been helpful to you in your personal life as opposed to your professional life?
Absolutely. I think I've been able to find a new way to connect with more people in my community. A lot of the folks who signed up for my course were strangers, people I didn't know, which is funny because I live in a small town. So I felt like I knew everybody, but I certainly don't. I'm finding out. And just folks who, you know, I loved bringing roller derby to Alpena because I was able to bring this awesome offering to the community and get so many people involved. But like you mentioned, roller derby is not as accessible to everyone as self-defense is. And so being able to reach that audience that roller derby might not be right for, but being able to still deliver that empowerment and that sort of thing, you know, everything, every good thing that comes with learning these skills is awesome. So, on a personal level, I don't know why it's so hard for us to pat ourselves on the back as women, but I'm very proud of the fact that I can offer this and serve my community in this way. You know, I kind of walk with my head a little higher because this is something that's truly going to help my community.
Well, I'm proud of you. If that makes it a little easier, but I am. So you have given one course so far, a Pretty Deadly mm-hmm. course. And just so our listeners are very clear on who Christy is as a badass Pretty Deadly trainer. She graduated our very, very first group of Pretty Deadlies in North America, which is no small thing. So thank you for that, Christy. I really am proud of you.
Thanks.
For that alone, but just for being a part of the program and a part of the team. What I want to know, though, is what was that like for you? What was giving the class like for you? Was it different from the normal ways that you're working with groups in your fitness studio? Was it surprising? Well, you already said that you mentioned, you know, the people who signed up for your course were complete strangers to you. So that was a little bit of a surprise.
I think my biggest takeaway from teaching the course for the first time in Alpena was that the women were so curious. You know, it wasn't just, hey, we're going to get together and I'm going to teach you these cool moves. It's they were so inquisitive about the purpose and where it came from and the origins. And it was just it was very involved. And I just love the female mind. You know, I think that's something that a door that was open for me and my own curiosity was like, okay, these people are really into this and they want to learn this, but they really want to absorb the material. And I think a large part of that is the way that we teach it. You know, in a typical fitness class, I am turning on loud music and, you know, it's more of a follow me. Whereas with Pretty Deadly, it's not a fitness class, you know, it's a self-defense class. There's two very different things. So there's no music. I mean, well, that's not true. There is music, but it's at a very important part of the program.
Right.
But there's not ongoing music, and you know, we're concentrated because it is very important that we get these movements, you know, worked in and down so that they become like reflexes.
I think that curiosity is really interesting. I found that too, that I had walked around with this idea that nobody was really that interested in these aspects of martial arts that I find so fascinating. And by, I mean, anybody who's not a martial artist. Mm-hmm. And there aren't as many women in martial arts as there are men still. It's a very male-dominated field. But when I've talked in my Pretty Deadly courses, when I lead them, I talk way, way, way too much. Because we're always running over time, and then we don't have enough time to do everything. But and I'm a sucker. If anybody asks me the right question, I will just go off on a story, especially if it's about where does this come from in a martial arts sense. But what's real, because, oh, now I get to tell the history of martial arts, one of my favorite stories. So it's been really, really satisfying to me as well to see that same curiosity, to see people who are really engaged, you know, with what they're learning, and that they really want to learn it. And it's not, I mean, yes, we're learning it because some of these things, or all of these things, are things that hopefully we'll never need, but are there if we do need right. them. But also because yeah. of that curiosity of, like, you know, what is kind of the legacy that this comes from in martial arts? What is the training behind it? What is the you know, the utility behind it in our bodies? You know, I just think mm-hmm. it's so satisfying that people actually are curious, because I wasn't banking on that when I mean, my very first client was my mom. So she wasn't really curious. She was more, it was a little more combative, I would say.
Yeah. I mean, you know, in a fitness setting or a group fitness class, you know, the trainer says, do a bicep curl, do a jumping jack. And people just kind of mindlessly do it. And they're like, all right, I'm getting my heart rate up, I'm doing the thing. Whereas this is just so different. It's just so different.
I think it's, I'm hoping what your groups get and what all groups get is that same spark of interest in how the body works. This is what I got from my teacher, and it's so invaluable. He has such a very, very deep understanding of body mechanics, and he was able to translate that to us as well. And it is fascinating. It's fascinating that if you stack your wrist a certain way, you can increase the amount of weight that you carry. It's fascinating that your spine, when it's properly aligned, is an unbelievably strong steel rod. All of the, like, these little functions, it's so fascinating that we do this, that we're so incredibly powerful with just these little tweaks.
Yeah.
You know, and I hope that that's something that people continue to stay interested in, whether they pursue that through yoga or martial arts or Pilates or weightlifting or roller derby or whatever it is. It's endlessly fascinating what our bodies can teach us about what we can do, and about who we are. I think, for me, I'm probably still never going to try roller. Now I'm like, I'm going to be 55, and I think trying roller derby sounds like a broken hip to me already. That's not something I'm going to do. But what I would like to know is, if you were to combine the two things, if you had to teach self-defense to your roller derby teams, what would you teach them?
Well, actually, in our course, we teach the step back, which is very, very similar to how we get in front of an opponent and take up their space, and hopefully, if we're successful, knock them down. So I think that one would be just a slam dunk with the roller derby girls. You know, when you're talking about having wheels on your feet, it's a little different. And with roller derby, you must keep your arms, per the rules, you must keep your arms tucked into your torso. So that takes away a lot of the what we are able to do, but as far as similarities to Pretty Deadly, because a lot of what we teach is upper body movement. I mean, we do a fair amount of lower body movement, but we are not allowed to kick people in roller derby either. I mean, in a lot of
Limited.
ways, what we teach in self-defense is more deadly, hence the name.
Hence the name.
Hence the
Thank you
name.
very much, Christy.
Oh, what a
Do
pleasure
you,
this has been.
I do have one last question. Do you
Oh,
have a
sure.
favorite Pretty Deadly move?
I mean, you're asking me to pick from all of my favorite children. I would say my favorite move
It's a
is
Sophie's
probably
choice.
I would say my favorite move is probably the clapback, because it's just so unassuming. You don't realize until that last second that it really can screw somebody up. I mean, but they're asking for it, so.
They're asking for it. It's
Yeah.
satisfying.
Yeah.
Indeed. Not that we promote violence.
No.
We don't at all. No.
Absolutely not.
Thank you very much, Christy, for taking the time to talk today. I really appreciate it. If everybody and anybody wants to find you on Instagram or the internet or in Alpina itself, how do they do that?
In the world, you can find me at skellafit.com. That's SKELLAFIT.com. Skellafit came from my roller derby name. So a lot of folks call me Skella. You can find me on Instagram at Untraditional Athlete and Skellafit Nation, always taking new members. It's a private group that we have on Facebook where we share a lot of fitness inspiration and tactics. And we've got an upcoming Sobriety Curious book club, which should be fun for summer reading.
All right. Sobriety curious. That's a new phrase for me.
Yeah.
I get
We
it.
could definitely talk about it more if you want.
Yes. But for now, we're gonna say goodbye. Thank you very much for joining me. And sign up for Christy's classes if you are in the Alpena, Michigan area or not. Fly in, have a vacation. Go to beautiful Michigan for 6 weeks. It's a nice place to be. But thank you very much. And you will see Christy more often, actually, if you're in the United States and you are interested in becoming certified as a Pretty Deadly trainer. Christy is also our master trainer in the United States, meaning she is qualified to certify other trainers because I cannot be everywhere all at once. She will be leading some certification trainings with me this summer and then on her own throughout the rest of the year. So follow us on well, don't bother on social media, but because it's terrible right now. But definitely check out our website,
There you
and look for the certification schedule if you are interested in bringing Pretty Deadly to your groups.
I am also open if anyone in the US would like me to come out and hold a workshop at their place, their gym, their city, their town, their library, wherever. I'm game. I'm game to
That's right.
travel. Yeah. Let's do it.
Yes,
Let's spread the Pretty Deadly love.
I endorse that.
Well, thank you,
All
Susie. I
right.
appreciate all of this.
Thanks. Well, me too.
You have been listening to the Pretty Deadly podcast. You can learn more about who we are and what we do and how to find a Pretty Deadly course near you by visiting our website at prettydeadlyselfdefense.com. And if you're a fitness or martial arts pro and you'd like to enhance your instructor skills, our summer certification programs are open for enrollment, and you can find them on our website at prettydeadlyselfdefense.com/self-defense-trainer, all one word. This podcast is produced by Singe Network for Pretty Deadly, recorded in Berlin, and our original music is the track Icarus Wish by Berlin band Dead Centuries, used with permission by the artists.